the bad things Israel is doing.
The superpowers that support Zionism are former colonial powers, most of them. And they had a role in creating Zionism in the first place. Many people allowed the Zionists to really empower themselves. So they were originally empowered by people who probably had a sense of guilt about the Holocaust, but eventually they became so powerful that they are able to control so many media outlets. They are able to control many politicians.
Speakers at the conference included former diplomats, politicians, journalists and activists from several countries, including China, the US, Britain, Russia and many others. Video links were also established with the spokesman for the worldwide anti-Zionist religious group, Neturei Karta International. Analysts at the conference are saying that the aftershocks of the Gaza crisis triggered by Israeli genocidal war are highly likely to reach far beyond West Asia and the Africa region, with the US credibility as a regional security guarantor shot to pieces. West Asia might see increased diplomatic engagement from China and Russia.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas Political Bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and the lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We are talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages, and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there is a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have one bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat, and if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10.
The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget, and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Chanting anti-Israel slogans and carrying placards with messages thanking the IRGC for conducting Operation True Promise. Thousands of Iranians marched down the streets in major cities across the country after the Friday prayers to voice their support for the armed forces and a recent punitive military operation carried out against Israel, dubbed Operation True Promise. The retaliatory attack was in response to Israel's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st, resulting in the martyrdom of top IRGC commander Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi and six other military officers. The punitive retaliatory attack involved a slew of drones and missiles targeting and causing damage to Israeli military bases.
There was a time when they could attack us and get away with it. But now the IRGC has proven that those days are over. I'm so proud of them.
We've been waiting for this moment for so long, ever since they assassinated Haj Qasem. I'm so grateful to our armed forces.
The IRGC really made all Iranians proud. We are so happy. That is why I'm here to thank them.
I was so happy on the night of the attack that I came out on the street to celebrate that the Israelis finally got what they have deserved after committing so many crimes.
The demonstrators also used the opportunity to denounce Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians.
We are here for the people of Gaza. I don't think any human being can watch what's happening and be indifferent.
Defending the oppressed is our duty. That is why I always take part in these demonstrations.
In cities all across Iran, people took part in mass demonstrations to show their support for the IRGC and Operation True Promise. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Instead of beating the drums of war, it is the delicate taps of instruments such as the dulcimer or the santur in Persian and the harmonious melodies of different tongues that should be wafting across borders. As Iran celebrates its National Culture Week in South Africa, officials and the public have visited exhibitions in the key cities of Johannesburg, Pretoria and Cape Town to learn more about the Persian heritage. The event was held at the Castle of Good Hope in Cape Town, which was a Dutch colonial fort and is now a museum.
Culture is a very powerful construct because it forces people to communicate, not only through language, because I can't speak the Iranian language, they can't speak Afrikaans, which is my mother tongue, but through our handiwork, through our art, through our crafts that we do, we can connect as human beings and exchange ideas, because culture is not devoid of power and of politics.
And this view is shared by South African officials and even within the Organization of Developing Economies, BRICS Plus, which Iran joined at the beginning of 2024.
It's about looking forward to us coming out with a university of some sort. And that university is going to be a technology-driven university that has got culture imbued in it, because we cannot just be driven by, you know, gadgets and technologies. We have to put our humanity within this technology. If we can do that, I believe that we can go very far as a people.
South Africa and Iran have extensive relations, and so through expanding this exchange of unique arts and crafts, they can effectively use the skills of their respective peoples to develop economic ties and, within the framework of BRICS Plus, shape a new world which breaks away from the current system. Culture is important now more than ever, as it fosters understanding and can develop closer relationships between different peoples. In a world overwhelmed with conflict, exhibitions such as these are important for peace. Hassan Siria, Cape Town.
It took the Turkish president more than 3 days to come up with a statement on Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel. Erdogan blamed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for trying to spread conflicts and create tensions in the region through provocations. He added that those who did not voice their rejection of Israel's aggression on Gaza for several months are today condemning Iran's response.
İsrail'in uluslararası hukuku.
The main one responsible for the tension that gripped our hearts on the evening of April 13 is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his bloody administration. Israel is trying to provoke a regional conflict, and its attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was the last drop.
Turkish government was criticized by the opposition for its silent position from regional tension. Deputy chair of Republican People's Party Erhan Özgel said he was astonished not to see a single reaction or statement by Erdogan's cabinet or his ministers after the attack.
Amid such an important development in our region and a military assault launched directly by another state targeting Israel for the first time since the October War in 1973, amid such an escalation and such great tension in the region, we're astonished to observe that not a single official, especially the Minister of Foreign Affairs, has made any comment on this issue.
Meanwhile, an opposition parliament member slammed the AK ruling party's double standard, saying they pray for the children of Gaza on one hand while selling the fuel that is used to bomb those children on the other.
Can you imagine this hypocrisy? On the one hand, they're praying for the children of Gaza, and on the other hand, selling fuel to Israeli jets. You say Al-Quds is your red line. You're sending terrorism to Quds. You have Gaza children in one hand and the green dollars on the other hand. Shame on you.
Turkey holds significant importance in the region, and every development has an impact on Turkey politically and economically. Therefore, as experts say, the only way Turkey's silence can be explained is by linking it to the economy. And it is also the reason why Ankara did not immediately cut trade ties with Israel, and it merely severed diplomatic relations. Many believe a country like Turkey and a leadership like the Justice and Development Party were expected to not only defend Iran, but also stand by its Muslim neighbor against Israel.
Turkey had been silent about this issue, but as of yesterday, support came from President Erdogan, blaming Israel and supporting Iran. This was very important and provided a clear and good response. True, Turkey has economic relations with Israel, but if Turkey wants to develop and enhance its relations with Eastern countries, such as Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and even Syria, it can reach a good place regionally. While Turkey has economic relations with Israel, its relationship with Iran goes much further. Therefore, Turkey should definitely stand by Iran in this matter.
Many believe it is time for Turkey to choose where to stand, rather than trying to verbally support the resistance and continue to press ahead with its Western and Israeli collaborations. Erdogan's comments on Iran's retaliatory attacks came late, just like the decision to cut a trade with Israel was late. It seems Ankara is walking a very thin line in its ties with Iran amid fears of harming economic relations with the Israeli regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions.
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield,
in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over, and Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with Iranian officials and the ambassadors of Muslim countries on auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr on April 10th, 2024.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. All praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and our Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and his untainted, pure, immaculate, guiding, and well-guided chosen progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to congratulate all the honorable people here in this meeting, including the honorable officials from various organizations within the country, as well as the entire Iranian nation on the auspicious occasion of Eid al-Fitr. I would also like to extend my congratulations to our guests here, the ambassadors of Islamic countries, and to all the Muslim nations. We hope, God willing, that this Eid will be a true celebration and a source of joy and blessings for the entire Islamic Ummah.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
First of all, I feel it necessary to once again refer to the special spiritual atmosphere of the month of Ramadan in our country. The reason I emphasize this is because we should appreciate and preserve the spiritual atmosphere, which included gatherings for reciting supplications, beseeching God, praying the prayers in groups, thriving mosques, people helping others, and giving iftar, the meal for breaking the fast, in mosques and on the streets. In other words, people truly showed their merit during this month of Ramadan in spiritual aspects with their recitations of the Quran and other practices, in social aspects by providing assistance and financial help to people, particularly the underprivileged, and also in political aspects. The rally that took place on Quds Day was a remarkable international political move. Where else can you see such a thing? The information that we have received this year from the experts that we are familiar with tells us there was truly a public outcry in the country on Quds Day. There were larger crowds than seen in previous years. These are truly something to be grateful for. I sincerely thank our dear nation for taking the initiative and moving forward in all of these different fields. However, merely expressing our gratitude in words to our dear nation is not enough.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I want to thank you.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
From Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. As the Israeli genocide continues with fresh massacres every day, more and more people around the world are boycotting and protesting against the Zionist regime. In Western countries like the United States, which is the main supporter of the Israeli entity, protests on university campuses are on the rise, and so is the crackdown against them. As activists demand an end to Washington's support for the Zionist regime, the House of Representatives has just approved to give Israel billions of more dollars. The more it kills, it seems, the more the regime is supported by the Western hegemonic front, especially its leader, the United States of America. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program. Out of Vancouver, Khalid Barakat, spokesperson of the Masar Badil movement. And out of Moscow, Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Basira Press. Thank you both for being with us. Well, Let me start it off in Vancouver with Khaled. Khaled, just today more mass graves were discovered in Khan Yunis at the Nasser Hospital. The bodies of hundreds of patients who were massacred by regime forces and simply dumped into mass graves were found. Let's start with your thoughts on the level of depravity of this regime and the way its backers simply look the other way. Okay, it seems I've lost Khaled. Ali, I'm going to pose that question to you. Go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Yes. I mean, it's just every day we discover these massacres or new leftovers of other massacres. At previous massacres, they discover mass graves like this. And this is an everyday occurrence. And yet, nothing happens really except for that which is done by the resistance axis. As far as the rest of the world powers, they don't really do anything. But they still harp on about fake news that has already been debunked about the mass rapes, about beheaded babies, about all these different types of things. Even the original people who submitted those fake stories have had to admit to their falsity, but only after 30,000 people died. Only when it's too late, but still, people are still labeled as this, that, or the other for questioning these official stories, even though the evidence is very easy to see. So it's just a matter, it's just really showing the naked face of the so-called international community. It's ambivalence, it's apathy towards these grave crimes. And really, that's why I think that the world should really consider the resistance axis led by Iran to be the heroic force that is actually trying to put a stop to this genocide. Perhaps the only time that there were no airstrikes on Gaza or even the sound of warplanes flying over Gaza was during the Operation True Promise,
right,
when Iran's drones and ballistic missiles were flying over the skies of occupied Palestine.
Well, Ali, staying with you, hopefully our technical issues will be sorted out with Khaled. But inshallah, in the middle of the Zionist entity committing more heinous crimes in Gaza, why would the American regime's House of Representatives approve to give $26 billion more to the Israeli regime? I mean, in the middle of all of this, as there are more protests taking place, why would they do it at this time?
It just goes to show how complicit they are in this genocide, and that the Zionist agenda is an extension of the American agenda, which is a satanic agenda. They're really there to oppose everything that is godly, everything that is right and wholesome on this earth, and just to carry out as much evil as possible. The depth and the evil of this regime is so deep-seated, it can't even be described in materialistic terms. We're dealing a very, very deep spiritual evil. These are really servants of the devil. The United States can pretend as much as it likes to be a Christian nation, but no Christian nation would put up with mass bloodshed, with a financial system based off of usury that enables them to finance all these things, and at the same time take bread off the backs of the American people. This aid package is not to the benefit of anybody except a very satanic system that sits in Washington, D.C., and basically sucks the blood of the entire world. I mean, the poor people in their own country and the people around the world. We can see rivers and rivers of blood is what fuels the comfort of the United States system. And there's really no rational explanation for what they're doing. These people are absolute psychopaths, and they do not deserve to stay in power, not for 1 second longer.
All right, stay with me, Ali. Khaled has rejoined us. Sorry, viewers, technical issues that we had. Well, Khaled, does the approval of these new funds by the House mean that the regime is being given a green light to continue with his genocide? I mean, is there any other way of looking at it?
Yes, salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Marzia, and to your guest, Brother Ali. What's happening is that the United States is arming the Zionist regime to the teeth, not just with financial funds, but also with military and political support. The United States is adopting a strategy where on the ground they are actually leading this war crimes and genocide against the Palestinian people, and the blood of Palestinians are on the U.S. hands. But on rhetoric and in media, they, you know, talk about humanitarian aid and less killing of Palestinian civilians. In reality, the United States and Israel are both committing this genocide against the Palestinian people. The United States, on the actual and real policies, what they do is that they have been blocking any efforts to get a ceasefire. They have been sending Israel all kinds of weapons, approving funds to the Israeli occupation forces, and at the same time blocking even, accepting Palestine as a full member in the United Nations. I mean, to that level, the United States is willing to use its veto power in order to support Israel. Now, why the United States is doing this when we see that the American people are actually voicing their rejection to these war crimes and saying that we don't want our tax money to go to a genocide. The reason is because Biden have no, Biden is not the United States. And at the same time, Biden doesn't care if, more 10,000 or 20,000 Palestinians are killed, as long as, Bibi Netanyahu and his government, they're happy and they won't create problems for him in an election time. But at the same time, we have to look at the decision makers in the United States. The U.S. regime has pillars that decide its strategy, the Pentagon, the CIA, the State Department, all of these pillars, the agencies, basically look at Israel as it's their colony, and that the war in the region, it's their war. And that's why the United States is willing to get engaged in bombing anyone in the region, maybe with the exception of Iran, because Iran is a very powerful country. But with the exception of Iran, they're willing to do anything to the region in order to impose their hegemony and their will over the people of the region. That's basically the war that Palestinian people today are subject to is carried by the United States. This war could end in one phone call if the U.S. wants to stop the war, but they don't want to.
Well, Khaled, you talked about, you said that basically because of Netanyahu, Biden wants to keep this war going. What about the American people themselves? This is, as you said, an election year. And I mean, how can a part of Congress totally ignore the growing calls by the American people that are demanding a ceasefire and an end to support of the Israeli regime?
I mean, if anything, the heroic October 7th military offensive carried by the Palestinian resistance against the Zionist regime have exposed the so-called liberal democracy and Western democracy. And that is because the people could say actually something and their regimes say something else. Their government actually take a different kind of position. And that tells you that the public opinion in, let's say, the UK, how important is it for, the ruling class of the UK? It's nothing. Millions of people in London have been talking about, stop the genocide, stop the war crimes against the Palestinian people, and the government in UK don't care about their opinion at all. The other thing is that we have been also seeing how much this imperialist, colonialist powers are exposed when it comes to the issue of human rights. The United States today, Germany, and these, fascist regimes, they cannot lecture anyone about human rights and about human dignity and about, peace and justice. No one is going to believe them because the world is watching and seeing that these war crimes against our people in Gaza, especially after 17 years of siege, is carried at the hands of Germany and France and UK and the United States, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Jordan, I mean, imperialist power and their puppet regime in the area. And the only power today that is standing up against this vicious criminal camp is Iran and the camp of resistance in the region. They are getting, you know, the support of the people of the region. I challenge them to do a referendum, you know, in Egypt and see that the vast majority of the people in Egypt support Iran and not the, you know, Egyptian regime. They support Yemen and not this fascist, you know, General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. The same goes on the vast majority of the Muslim world and the Arab world. Today, we are entering a new stage where the Zionist colonialist project is crumbling from within because it's a very corrupted regime, and as we expected, that it's going to start cracking, you know, the Israeli army have failed and all of their objectives in the last 6 months, except killing people, but they, the military operation that they declare and its objectives have failed. The Palestinian resistance still very strong in Gaza and in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Yemen, and they are actually not just winning the hearts and the minds of the people in the region, but also the hearts and the minds of the people of the world.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Ali, let's look at what's happening inside the U.S. itself, because not only are activists breaking up meetings, boycotting and sanctioning activities on American university campuses, they're growing. But Columbia University has become the center as students have been protesting the university's investment in Zionist entity. Now the university and police have cracked down hard on these students. I mean, why? What happened? Because you know, freedom of speech and freedom of assembly, especially on university campuses, is something that a lot of students perhaps thought that it was really their right to have and to participate in.
In the United States and in the liberal world in general, all these freedoms are only the freedom to pursue falsehood. So what the Columbia University students are essentially doing is reestablishing what academia, what higher education is supposed to be, which is a free and open playing field to seek the truth, not to drown in falsehood. Unfortunately, since the Rockefeller family took over the educational system in the early 1900s, the educational system has been manipulated in order to support certain narratives. Rather than seeking the truth, students are essentially told pre-fabricated narratives on many different subjects. For example, even in the medical field, they're taught only that pharmaceuticals are the best. They're not taught about nutrition, all these other types of things. In the realm of history and politics, they're taught the imperialist version of history, the Zionist version of history. Even the so-called radical politics of universities, Trotskyism, is labor Zionism, basically the idea that everybody's imperialist, America's imperialist, Iran is imperialist, and it opposes all authority, even the authority of God himself. That's why you have people going into university and then coming out more dumb and more immature than when they came out. The only thing they know how to do is tell you how many hundreds of genders there are. She, her, he, him, you're a frog or something like that. I don't know. and they get very childishly angry if you disagree with them. That's the so-called radical politics. So what the Columbia University students are really showing, what it really means to be a revolutionary, what it really means to be a truth seeker, because they're not just demanding these kind of like liberal Zionist platitudes like ceasefire now or stop apartheid or all these other kinds of mid-level slogans. They're actually standing in favor of the resistance. They're raising the names of the resistance and showing that free people around the world respect the resistance, even in the hearts of America, and they understand who is the real terrorist. They understand who is the real hero in this equation. So they're not even self-censoring themselves in order to appeal to the sensibilities of different liberal, the liberal cosmopolitan liberal wing of the imperialist pie. So it's really, what they're doing is brave, and I think that's why there's such a big crackdown, because they're not abiding to liberal Zionist narratives, and they're breaking down this kind of Rockefeller model of education by really establishing what it means to stand for the truth and to oppose falsehood, which is what academia really should be, but it hasn't been for many decades now.
Right, indeed. Well, Khaled, students from other universities have joined in solidarity with Columbia. How afraid do you think the powers that be are as they witness this growing awareness of young people and the risk of losing the narrative which they have promoted for so long?
Well, the United States regime is absolutely are in fear and scared because of the student movement. The solidarity with Palestine in U.S. campuses did not start on October 7th, but we have been witnessing a qualitative work by the students, brave students from all walks and different backgrounds, Palestinians, Arabs, non-Arabs, Jewish, brave students who are part of this movement in campuses. And the United States gets even more worried when the universities like Harvard, Columbia, Yale, some of these universities, that they understand that these students in 5 years from now, they are going to be leading, and they will be in positions of lawyers and judges and, very important positions. And they see that also the younger generation in the United States, the vast majority of them, they don't want to just end the Israeli occupation, they want to end Israel as a Zionist racist regime. And this call of liberating Palestine from the river to the sea is very central in the student movement and in general in support, the movement, solidarity movement with the Palestinian people. And this is really changing the entire situation, because what's happening is that you get like Canadian campuses calling for the boycott of Israeli academia, Israeli institutions. And these universities are not just an echo or an expression of a younger generation, especially the youth, but also the university's faculties and academia are also getting involved in more support of the Palestinian people. And this is affecting the internal situation in the United States when it comes to the study of colonialism, the history, and all these disciplines that the Zionists fear. Like when you study the history of our area, West Asia. That's why, for example, you see the Zionist movement in campuses are trying to block any establishment of a serious study center that focus on Iranian studies, to study Iran. They don't want people to know anything about Iran, the history, the people, the culture, the poetry, the literature, the civilization of Iran. They want Iran image to be in the U.S. media as this country that is just supporting, those who hate Israel and the United States. And that's the image they try to promote. But they are also failing on this front as well, because also of new technology and social, media and the creativity of the younger generation in expressing their position against war crimes, genocide, racism. This is also an issue very important because it raises internal issues in the continent here, and that is the struggle of black people in this continent, the black liberation movement, the native indigenous struggle in this continent. And the Palestinian struggle is very much connected to all of these issues. Mm-hmm. So what we are seeing in campuses is coalitions of all different struggles that is opposing the same enemy, and that is the capitalist system in the U.S. and the White House.
Right. Well, Ali, another part of the bill approved by the House of Representatives, which will go to the Senate next weekend, will give $60 billion more to Ukraine, $26 billion more to Israel, is a ban on TikTok in the U.S. with its Chinese owner. Now, if the bill passes Congress and is signed into law, the Chinese owner will have 9 months to sell TikTok. Of course, if he doesn't, then it will be banned. By the way, TikTok has been one of the main forms of information on Palestine for the under-30 crowd, and over 170 million Americans use TikTok. Your thoughts?
The TikTok bill is very, very dangerous. The ban on it was actually promoted by AIPAC, which is a foreign lobby group promoting a foreign country, although America is part of their, they have a kind of conjoined twin, existence with the American empire. But this bill in particular, it's not just about TikTok. There's basically going to include the ability to ban any site that may or not be hosted in so-called enemy countries. So, for example, Press TV could be banned, or other outlets, or even independent outlets. For example, my website could be banned, even though, for whatever reason, because they don't want people to hear the truth. They don't want the Iranian perspective to be heard, as they're preparing now for a false flag attack that they're probably going to blame on Iran or Hezbollah. We can hear these echoes in the media that, oh, there's these Hezbollah terror cells in the U.S., even though Hezbollah has nothing to do with killing civilians. It only operates in the Levant region. And as far as terrorism is concerned, it's the one that defeated terrorists. It defeated ISIS in Syria, and it defeated the Zionist terrorists in South Lebanon. So 100%, just as Mossad has done false flags like the 9/11 attack, 7/7, and others, they're going to kill Americans again, and they're going to blame it on Hezbollah. And any website that tells the truth about it, if it's originating from a country that America doesn't like, they're going to erase it.
Just 30 seconds, Ali, I don't have much time. At the end of the day, do you think they will be successful in countering this awareness that is taking place, not only in the United States, but across the world, regarding Palestine and also their own countries and what their governments have been doing?
I believe it's impossible, because God is the one who guides, and there's a great awakening going on. And as the money is being sucked from the American people's pockets towards Ukraine, towards Israel, they're going to be dissatisfied with their own government, and eventually the chickens are going to come home to roost. And the Federal Reserve, the United States government, are all going to find their day of reckoning at the hands of at least some parts of the American people who have some decent hearts and are God-fearing.
All right, and on that note, thank you both for being